Hi, I'm Kristen.
And I'm Danielle.
And together we founded the website everyoneisgay.com. And somehow, 2 years later, we are now presenting a panel at South by Southwest. We don't really know how it happened or how we got here. But before we talk to you more about how we started something that accidentally became a business, we thought we would tell you a little bit about ourselves. My name is Kristen, like I said, and I live in Brooklyn with one cat, a very smushable cat, as you can see. I'm one thesis away from a master's degree in gender studies from the CUNY Graduate Center in Manhattan. That's what I'll look like after I get that. And I prefer pie over cake, unless it's ice cream cake, in which case all bets are off.
I also live in Brooklyn and have one cat. This is Janet. I created the website Lesbians Who Look Like Justin Bieber, which is... You know. That was me. I also ran social media for Virgin Mobile on the Lady Gaga Monster Ball tour. And I like cake over pie, and I don't like ice cream or soup, which I get a lot of shit for. So if you get it out now. But after starting Lesbians Who Look Like Justin Bieber, I had a conversation with Kristen about a lot of the comments and questions I was receiving. It was kind of split. A lot of the community thought Lesbians Who Look Like Justin Bieber was hysterical. You're all in that category. Yeah. And then there was also a large group who thought that I was doing something wrong, thought that I was stereotyping the lesbian community or just offending Tegan and Sarah in some way. So we had a conversation, and we started the Tumblr, everyoneisgay.tumblr.com, mostly to address some of those questions and to be sarcastic and funny, pretty much.
Yeah, what we found almost immediately, though, was that as soon as we opened up a forum for people to ask questions, the questions piled in. There were some questions that automatically lent themselves to humor, but there were other questions that were much more serious in nature, like coming out, being bullied in school, and just falling in love in general. What we found was that we accidentally uncovered a place of huge need within the LGBTQ community, and I'm sure that most of you know what that stands for, but we don't like to alienate people, so just in case, there it is. You can probably read that, but I'm going to tell you. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and or questioning. As we found that we were addressing a need within that community, but we also found that we were reaching a much larger internet community of people of all sexualities and all gender identities.
One of the biggest reasons that we get such a large volume and scope of questions is because we have the ability for people to ask questions anonymously on our site. That option to receive anonymous questions was given to us by Tumblr when we first started. Anyone can do it, and we didn't really think twice about it, and now it's become one of the most important parts of our business. So if you were to click the little submit a question box on our site, it would take you to a page like this, and you have the option to ask the question either under your Tumblr name or ask anonymously.
Yeah, and that anonymity is what gave room for our readers to ask every single thing that they were thinking about and they were afraid to ask because they were afraid that they were going to seem stupid by asking it, or it was just an awkward question, or they were going to be hurt by someone's reaction to that question. Youth, and especially LGBTQ youth, are often very terrified to speak about their sexuality or their gender identity or just their identity in general. In case some of you are unfamiliar with what's happening in some of our nation's schools, we have a few statistics for you that are taken from a 2009 survey done by GLSEN, which is the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network. Here's the first one, or the first three. 84% of LGBT students reported being verbally harassed, 40% reported being physically harassed, and 19% reported being physically assaulted at school because of their sexual orientation.
72% heard homophobic remarks such as faggot or dyke frequently or often at school. Nearly two-thirds of students reported that they felt unsafe in school because of their sexual orientation, and more than a third felt unsafe because of their gender expression.
29% of LGBT students missed a class at least once, and 30% missed at least one entire day of school in the past month because of safety concerns.
And the reported grade point average of students who were more frequently harassed because of their sexual orientation or gender expression was almost half a grade lower than for students who were less often harassed.
So the fact that the internet exists as a space that can now be accessed virtually anywhere and by virtually anyone completely anonymously has opened up a huge community for a lot of youth who would have otherwise felt entirely isolated and who were unable in the past to find that sense of community that they sought after. It also has allowed them to find resources that would have otherwise been unavailable to them in the past. You can ask us a question on our site without ever leaving your name. You can read the questions and the concerns of other people without ever having to identify yourself. You can discover that there are other people with the same questions and with the same problems that you're having. And you can do that all without having to have your sister or your grandma or your coworker know about who you are or who you're dating right off the bat.
Yeah, so there came a point pretty early on in our growth with the website where we had to decide whether or not we wanted to answer these serious questions. And we decided to, but a part of me feels like we didn't even make that decision. I mean, I don't know how we were supposed to like not answer a question from a father whose son came out to him and he didn't know how to say, hey, it doesn't matter, I love you, no matter what, you know? We didn't really, I mean, what are we going to do? Be like, meh, no, we won't answer that one,
yeah.
You know? So, the internet made the decisions for us. In under a month after starting the site, we had hundreds of questions, and by month six, we had thousands.
Yeah, and our format really has not changed much since the inception of the website. We answer one question 4 days a week in a Danielle says, Kristen says format. This is sort of what it looks like on our site. Even if you go to our Tumblr.com, it's formatted to match the website itself. And you can see that Danielle answers first, and then I answer second, and that's always the format that we take. On the Tumblr blog roll itself, it looks like this, so it's just the gray. And originally, our Tumblr theme did not match our website theme, but we recently, very recently, finally got that all aligned, so everything looks the same. We also post one webcast every other week where we answer phoned-in questions, so people call in using Google Voicemail, and we download the call, and then we use our laptops to basically build out a larger webcast. So we answer two advice questions, and we also do a lot of lip syncing. We basically wanted to add a video element to the site, and we felt like if we were just talking for 5 minutes at a time, people would be bored, and we figured, who doesn't like lip syncing? So that's where the idea was born. To get just a brief feel for what you see or what you would see or will see when you tune in, you know, next week, this is a small sample of a question that we recently answered. Hey, so do you want to kiss before I get out of the car?
I don't kiss on the first date.
All right, see you next time.
All right. It'll probably be, like, less awkward if you're like, so do you want to kiss or no? Than it would be if you're like...
If the girl's like, anyway, so... And she opens the door and she's like, bye, have a great night. She doesn't want to kiss you.
Yeah.
You know? Or if she's, like, distracted and she's like, great, so it was really nice. Then, like, she probably doesn't want to kiss you.
Yeah.
But if she's like, I had a really good time.
Me too.
Cool.
Then kiss her.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks. The other part of our webcast, we want to include you on that as well. So we answer two questions, and in between those questions, we do a little something like this.
When I'm here, she's no.
When I hold on, he just lets go.
So, yeah, you're all so kind.
I know, right?
We should do live webcasts. There would be cheers
right?
for us when we're done.
Cheers, it's fun. So, as you obviously just saw and made us feel really good about, our format is a bit different from other advice-based websites. And whether it's because of how we were addressing the questions we were answering or what questions we were answering, almost immediately we found that our biggest audience was youth, 13 to 24, most of whom identify as LGBTQ.
Mm-hmm. And South by Southwest audience members.
members.
Also big audience. Right. So. We also noticed that there was a need outside of the LGBTQ community. We have parents, teachers, friends, family members, all who have these questions that they're very intimidated or that they're afraid to ask. And all of a sudden, there were these, you know, two idiots who were taking things a little lighter than they were used to and who made the questions accessible to them.
One of the first questions that we got that kind of made us say, okay, we're going to do serious and funny, within, I think, 6 months of starting the website, not even, actually. Probably,
I think it was like 3 months.
Like 3 months of starting the website, we got a question from a father who said, I'm recently widowed, and I have 5 children, 2 of which are still in diapers, 2 of which are in their terrible twos. I have a giant dog, and I have a 15-year-old son who, in the middle of an argument, yelled at me that he was gay, and then we haven't spoken since. And he had no idea how to talk with his son, how to say, it's okay, I don't care, I'm always going to love you, I just want you to be happy. He didn't know how to say that, and we were already, like, you know, it was already gut-wrenching before we even gave him the answer. But we both, in our own ways, told him he should write a letter, and he did. He wrote a letter to his son, and he sent us an email the next day saying that his son read the letter, and they already were starting an open dialogue, and things were already better, and that made us feel amazing. And then, throughout the past year and a half, we've gotten updates from the family. He'll be like, oh, everyone's out of diapers, so things are a little bit better, but someone pooped on the couch, and the dog ate a bottle of shampoo, and, you know, and I think 2 months ago, we got a letter from the son, and he's dyslexic and learning to write, and so this was like his first full-length letter, and it was to us, and it was to thank us for helping him and his father get the relationship back to a great place, and also to tell us that he had a boyfriend and highlighted in green and put sparkles around.
He was very excited about using his sparkle pen for the boyfriend part of the letter. So that experience that we had with that father and son is one of really hundreds at this point that we've had with other people in the past 2 years. And we often take a step back from the experiences and wonder how it's possible that we're in this position where we can have a dialogue with so many people about so many issues. And we think that it boils down to 3 things. The first being the quality of content that we put out on the site. The second is the integration of social media platforms. And the third is the constant attention and development to our personal brand. There it is, yeah.
There we go.
That was a kitten delay. That kitten was supposed to meow like 5 minutes ago.
Anyway, so when it comes to the first thing, quality of content, we think that it's super important that you all remember you have to be awesome in order for people to care about what you're saying.
It's one of our best slides, so you should take a good look at it.
I don't know if you noticed that the sparkles on You Are Awesome are going.
They move, so we're highly technical.
Now, take it in. But honestly, though that is important, there are a few things apart from that that do contribute to the things that we put out on the worldwide interwebs. First of which is we pay attention to the questions we post almost obsessively. We make sure that the questions make sense in a larger overall type way, and we also pay attention to per week and per month, and we're like obsessed about curating the questions, and we don't want too much of the same thing within 1 week, and we don't want too little of one thing in 1 month. It's ridiculous. But here is last week. These are some of the questions we answered. Do you have any advice for dealing with the death of a loved one? I'm dating a girl who's incredible and perfect, but I'm not physically attracted to her. Am I shallow? I joke about my gender a lot with my friends, but in reality, I'm totally confused. And I recently got out of a bad relationship. How do I learn to love myself again? So these, we try to make sure that we do questions about gender that are gender specific, and we do relationship questions, and then we do the more broad questions, and we try to mix them up as much as possible. And this curating of the questions makes people trust us a lot more, I think. And if we were posting a coming out question every single week, I don't think anyone would care.
Yeah, I don't think, well, they might, but
well, maybe a little,
we're not going to do that.
I mean, come on.
And also in that same vein, we've learned, as I'm sure many of you already know, that universality is the key to us getting reblogs and likes. if we post a question that is, my life is crazy, help. We have people that like the question. We can tell they did not have time to read the entire answer. They're like, oh, my life's crazy too. Like, reblog, you know? And so that's a really important thing for us to know. It doesn't keep us from posting the more specific questions, but it's just a good thing to be aware of. And, you know, we'll have weeks where we're like, okay, well, we've done a few specific questions and people are interested, but not going crazy. So then we do a more general question where people can identify on a larger spectrum. Past that, I also think that the way that we structure our answers is really important. Danielle and I have very different voices from each other, and there are a ton of people who are obsessed and excited about the abbreviations and the pop culture references that Danielle always uses. Yeah. And there are people that are really excited about like the gender studies jokes that I make, but I think that overall people are really excited about the fact that both are always present. Danielle always answers first, I always answer second, and that consistency is also really important to our readers.
We're also really consistent with the amount of posts that we do. We only do one question per day, and we do a webcast every other Thursday, and we sort of, but not very often, we'll update people on our news and our growth. And I can't tell you the amount of times that, regardless of the quality of post someone's posting, if it's too many, I will unfollow them. I don't care how great your posts are. If there are too many, I don't like you anymore. And also, earlier when I was talking about how awesome you have to be, I was sort of joking, but there is something behind the fact that we are funny and we use our sincerity and our laughter to answer these questions.
Yeah, we really think that the laughter is one of the biggest things, if not the biggest thing, that's allowed us to establish such a deep trust with so many of our readers. When you laugh at something, you're immediately feeling closer to the people around you who are laughing, you're immediately disarmed a bit, and it just allows you to approach the content with more trust and more familiarity. We've had so many people approach us and tell us that if it wasn't for the fact that we make them laugh, they wouldn't have been able to hear a lot of the other things that surround the answers and surround the content that we provide.
So as far as integration of social media, as of today, we have about 40,000 followers on Tumblr. And then outside of Tumblr, we get about 8,000 people to our site every day. So we're sort of reaching 50,000 people every day, which is super cool. And most of these numbers have all happened simply by word of mouth. We did have a small ad on lesbians who look like Justin Bieber. Oh, well, it's still there. I just don't ever update the site anymore. So sorry, guys. But we have a small ad on lesbians who look like Justin Bieber, which helps. And then we have gotten a few notable placements and mentions within the first few months of our site. These are our analytics from April of 2010 to December of 2010. And you can see there are like three little bumps. And with each bump, when it levels out, it levels a little bit higher. So the smallest one at the beginning was when Tumblr did a feature on us in July. It was a small feature as a part of a larger feature, and then about a week later, Tegan and Sarah tweeted about us, and, you know, lesbian sisters who sing songs about feelings. We have the same demographic,
basically. Same people, same audience. So.
And then the larger spike in November was when Tumblr did a larger feature on us. We were the main, what is it called?
Tumblr Tuesdays.
Tumblr Tuesday. We were the main little box of stuff on the Tumblr
Tuesday.
That's
what it's called. The main little box
on Tumblr Tuesday. But that was also around the same time that Dan Savage listed us as one of the second opinions on his site. So little things have happened, and you obviously can't see with our analytics, but our Tumblr followers increased around the same time with a big old number, too.
Yeah, and Tumblr obviously is where we began, and we owe a lot to them. And apart from just the mentions that we had on their Tumblr Tuesdays, just the very way that the site works has helped us grow our numbers substantially. We're at an interactive festival, so I'm going to assume that most of you know about Tumblr and how it works. But, you know, basically, if you blog a post, then people can reblog that post. So not only our readers are seeing what we're doing, but then the readers of those readers are seeing, and it just builds out from there. And we finally did something about the fact that when we get questions through Tumblr, it goes through the ask feature. So if we were to post the answer right away from that ask feature, you can't reblog it because Tumblr has that feature where you can't reblog ask posts so that it's clear who's answering. But for us, it's obviously pretty clear. We say, yeah, Danielle says, Kristen says. So we now actually copy the question into a text post and then answer in the body of the text so that people can reblog it and can, you know, spread the word. the readership passion and the dedication that we have found to be key in our growth outside of Tumblr is really key to the ability that we've had to grow our span of youth and the amount of people that we're reaching. I think every business decision that we've made has been because of the readers. The readers asked us to provide videos for them, and we did. The readers asked us to come to their schools and visit their schools and spread our message there, and we recently launched a nationwide tour of high schools and colleges, which we'll talk about a little bit more in a few minutes. Readers asked us to provide resources, and so we recently launched a resources page where you can click by state and see resources. So we want to take a few minutes just to talk to you about each of those prongs of efforts that we're doing right now and to talk about how we're evolving that network.
So apart from Tumblr, Everyone is Gay uses several other social media platforms, and I'm sure we all do, but to get into the larger conversation, and at this point, every single human being and their mother, and in most cases their grandmother, has a Facebook page. So it would not make sense for us to not have a Facebook page. This is what our Facebook page looks like. And, well, we did reach over 11,000 likes, so.
It's outdated.
I was really proud. I was, like, staring at the numbers. It was embarrassing. But what we found interesting when we started the Facebook page and our Twitter and everything is that everyone kind of has their main way of taking in information. There are a lot of people who are on our fan page or subscribe to it or whatever you call it who only read our questions on the Facebook fan page, and they don't even go to Tumblr.
Yeah, so we've set up our Tumblr to feed into both our Facebook and our Twitter accounts, actually, for that purpose. The Facebook feed, as you can see here, generally shows a bit of the question, and sometimes if the question's a little bit shorter, you get a bit of the answer, too. And what's awesome is that then if they're taking it in first through Facebook, there's a little Tumblr link there, and they click on that, and it takes them right to our Tumblr site. So that's an amazing thing, that it spreads the awareness of the other site. And the other thing that's great about Facebook is that it lends itself a little bit more to a dialogue between users. You can reply to posts on Tumblr, but there's something about the layout of Facebook that really engages people and that allows them to talk back and forth with each other. We also have had this really awesome thing happening recently where people will post a question to our Facebook wall, and before we even address it, our other readers are giving them feedback. This is a recent example of something that happened on the site. This person was asking about coming out to their family and gave a lot of specifics and said, you know, I need some help. And you can see Danielle and I mean, we usually don't answer advice on the Facebook page, but in this case, two of our readers immediately responded and gave feedback. And so there was, you know, there's this community that's really building there on the Facebook page.
The same way that Facebook has its own dedicated audience, so does YouTube, which is super interesting. This is our YouTube channel. Well, what it used to look like, it changed now. YouTube's all different.
It changed like yesterday. We were like,
what do we do? But, you know, it works the same. But we've had people come up to us and be like, oh my gosh, I love your videos. You guys are so funny on the YouTube, and don't even know that we have a website. Literally have no idea that everyoneisgay.com exists. So it's sort of our fault too, because until like a month ago, it didn't say everyoneisgay.com anywhere on any of our videos. So that was our bad, but we've added it recently, and I don't really think anyone pays attention, but at least now they can trace it back if they want to. Yeah.
I mean, I think something that's pretty obvious to everyone in the world at this point is that people really love watching videos. And that web series that we began about a year and a half ago now is a huge part of the reason that we had such a surge in the beginning. Readers definitely felt like they could connect with us through the writing, but it was being able to see us on screen, being able to hear us talk, being able to watch us laugh, and seeing us in our own apartments also that added a level of personal connection. Recently, we've been trying to like upgrade the quality of our webcasts, and so we changed it a bit and we put a gray backdrop behind us so that we could like work with lighting. You can see a couple of them in the top there, and people flipped out. They were so mad at us for changing our background and that they couldn't see our apartments. There's us with the gray backdrop, and there's us in Danielle's apartment, and there's my bedroom and the kitchen and the living room and my old apartment. So, you know, people really wanted to see us in the intimacy of our own homes. Is that all I have to say here? Yeah, that's all I have to say.
In addition to our primary YouTube channel, which we were just talking about, we recently began a second channel called Your Stories, which is a component of a larger project to cultivate resources for people who use our website. Right now, if you go to the top bar on our website, there is a resources button, and it'll bring you to a page that is under construction for now. It's basically a U.S. map, and you can click one of the states below, and it'll take you... Oh.
Or the battery of the computer will go out. Just... You want me to I'll tell them more about the resources page.
Okay, go ahead.
So when your computer battery isn't dying, you can basically click on, should I not talk? What happens when this happens? Has this ever happened? We're making history. Talk amongst yourselves. How do you feel about the resources page? Do you like it? Good? Yeah.
How embarrassing. Well, I'm using Keynote. Well, it is a Mac version of PowerPoint. Okay, so anyway, you click that, and it takes you to this map, and below is the list of states. You can click on a state, and then it will expand out to a list of resources. Some of the resources are LGBT-specific. Some of them are youth-specific. And then there are also resources that have to do with domestic violence and mental health, et cetera.
Yeah, the ultimate goal that we have is taking these resources and making them clickable by the actual state on the map, so that the map is interactive. And the other element of that map will be the Your Stories project that Danielle was just mentioning. We've taken videos from people that we've met across the entire country. And so we want to have it where when you click on the state, you see the resources, but you also see videos that are specific to that state. Because of the fact, as we mentioned, that a lot of these youth, LGBTQ or not, are feeling very isolated, regardless of if they're in an urban area or a rural area or a suburban area, and seeing other faces from the community, the direct community that they're in, is very important. This is just an example of one of the Your Story videos that we have on our Your Stories YouTube channel. This is taken in North Carolina.
I came out as transgendered, and actually talking to John was the first time that I said that I'm going to go by Keegan.
I fell in love with her a year ago, and I'm really excited about continuing to fall in love with him as Keegan. The end.
Yes.
Okay. Are they not the cutest people you've ever seen in your life? I can't take them.
Gosh. Anyway, so currently the videos that we post, you heard Keegan mention a John, and when we were on our fall tour, we had someone with us named John who took these videos for us and put some of them together, but now on our past tour, Kristen has been doing it on her MacBook. They're just videos that we take that we put together, and the resources per state were collected by our Big Gay Ambassadors, which were volunteers. There were at least one for each state, and then we also have some interns who could fill in the gaps. And they helped us. They believe in what we're doing, and they helped us, and they're amazing, and we love them. Mm-hmm. We hope to have the full map done by the end of the year. If anyone knows how to do that for free or cheap, you may see us after the panel.
Yeah.
Thank you. Anyway, before we started our tour that we keep yammering on about, I actually went on tour with Virgin Mobile. I was their social media roadie for the Monster Ball tour. And what was so cool about that was the people who would come up to me and say, oh, are you Danielle from Everyone is Gay? Your site is amazing, which that was cool too. But more so, it was when they would say things like, can you come to my school? How do I get you guys to come to my school? What will you talk about at our school? These are all the reasons I need you at my school. And it was incredible. I mean, it's amazing how we can reach people on the internet, but that level of like personal connection is also so important.
Yeah, so we jumped on that idea and... amazingly, we're able to do a 5-week tour of the East Coast this past September and October. That tour was almost entirely colleges, and we did like 3 or 4 high schools. And we just actually came into Austin from California. We were there for 2.5 weeks, and that tour was very different for us because it was at least 50%, if not more, high schools. And so we were doing our presentation in front of, you know, 1,400 students at South Pasadena High School, which was just a magical experience to be reaching not only the queer community, but also just the entire community to spread this message of that we can all make change and make a difference. The other thing that we thought was really important when we went out on tour was integrating the internet with that ground presence. One of the ways that we do that is by using Facebook. We accept pictures on our Facebook wall, and so, you know, afterwards when we're standing at the merch table or whatever, we say, hey, can you put that picture on our Facebook wall, which is awesome for two reasons. One, it's highly increased our Facebook likes because it drives traffic to the Facebook page, and two, you can see there's, like, comments on all these photos. Some of them are silly, some of them are silly, like that one that Danielle was just holding a giant shark. But it lets people know what we're doing so they can see it, et cetera. And obviously, we already mentioned that we integrate the Your Stories videos, which are also from the tour, on the internet. So those are two ways that we combine the two.
Yeah, the ability for our readers to see that we're real people, we think, helps a lot. It increases their level of trust in us. It also increases the amount of time that they'll come back and they care about what we're actually doing and they want to read our work. We saw a pretty substantial growth in traffic when we were out traversing the country, and that actually ties in directly with the third thing on our list, personal brand. Yep. Oh, okay.
That was a better timed kitten mew.
Yeah, that was much better. So we, aside from us answering our readers' requests, we're also available to them in almost every social media fashion. And that connection that they get with us makes them stick with us. It makes them trust us. It makes them feel like they can lean on us. And our accessibility, it just proves we're real. We'll talk to them, you know, and our readers don't have to feel like they're little kids and we're talking down to them twice a week. They just feel like we're one of them because we are.
Yeah, both Danielle and I have our own personal Tumblr, Twitter, and Facebook accounts alongside our Everyone is Gay accounts. And we use the personal accounts mostly just for funny stories and things that happen in our own lives, and they don't always tie into, as a matter of fact, mostly they don't tie into our work with Everyone is Gay. And we've really noticed that personal presence is just as important as the Everyone is Gay presence. Obviously, Everyone is Gay is a much more activist, change-making site, but people take it much more seriously because to them, they're not seeing two strangers answer questions or tell them, hey, you should really pay attention to these issues. They're seeing people that they know. They know our cats. They know, you know, they know a lot about our cats was the biggest thing I could think of about my own life. So that just goes to show you who I am. But they know us. And so because they know us, they're listening in a very different way than if they didn't.
Yeah, I'm just going to give you a small sampling of what your life would be like if you followed us on Twitter and Tumblr. So if you were to follow me on Twitter, you would see me talking a lot about Kristen Bell crying over that sloth because I couldn't. I think I reblogged it on my own Tumblr like 16 times in 1 week. And you would also see my cat posed like Barbara Streisand. This is Janet. And then if you were to follow Kristen, she's a little racier than I am. She says things like, that was honestly the best Super Bowl I've seen since Janet Jackson's tit popped out.
Was it not?
Come on, though. It was. I agree with you. And also, she sometimes compares the size of my neck with her cat's neck, yeah. Which, oddly enough...
Same size.
We can wear the same size collar.
Yeah.
Inflatable collar.
You look much happier than my cat looks in the collar, though.
Thank you.
apart from the three items that we just went over, quality of content, integration of many, many social media platforms, and the attention to our personal brand... Meow. The other obvious important element in running this organization and any organization that's a startup is funding. The more that we grow, the more that we have huge needs, both technologically, needs for travel, and just needs for the business to grow as a whole. And it's completely terrifying to both of us at every single moment of every single day.
Yeah, we currently run in a very hand-to-mouth manner, so we're not certain, we're not any sort of expert on financial stability, but we do think that we've done pretty well as far as startups go. In our first year and a half of operation, we pulled in enough funds to sustain a 5-week, 4-person tour of the East Coast and to allow Kristen and I to quit our part-time jobs and be able to get by for 2 months.
We really felt like it was a big thing, and when we ran through this morning, she was like, for 2 months, and I was like, you realize that that's... that we just, okay, that's 2 months.
But still,
we were very proud of ourselves. Our three main sources of pulling in funding are merchandise sales, the honorariums that we take in from colleges, and donations. We run merchandise sales through a platform called Store Envy. They're around. Many of you probably know of them. They're awesome. They allow the funds to go right through PayPal, and other than the PayPal fees, they're completely free. This is what part of our store looks like. And we handle our merchandise in the same way that we handle everything else. We answer to our readers. They tell us what they want, and we try to do our best at giving it to them. And you can see there's a cat in one of the pictures. That's because we made a cat kitty where they get buttons of our cats and lyrics to a song we wrote about our cats. So. Yeah.
Man, if you guys are confused at all, we love our cats. So the next one, college honorariums, they're a pretty straightforward means of making or of raising money. We interface with students on their campus. We talk to them about what we need, and then we remain super flexible depending on the school's financial situation. They submit the proposals, and they petition us to get us to come to their school. And usually they're pretty successful.
Yeah, this is also one of our best graphics. We're very, very good at using clip art.
It's pixelated clip art, you guys.
It's good. The donations that we get from our readers work in a number of different ways. First of all, we are fiscally sponsored by an organization called Fractured Atlas. A lot of you may already know how fiscal sponsorship works, but in short, it's basically they're just a big umbrella organization that has a bunch of smaller organizations underneath it. So they take 6% of the donations that we get, and for that fee, they handle all of the things that allow us to give those tax write-offs. And so that 6%, as anyone who has ever even looked at the forms that you need to fill out to create a 501c3, is much less than the administrative overhead that it would cost us at this point to be a fully-fledged 501c3. Fractured Atlas also partners with a campaign, with a fundraising platform called Indiegogo. And we used that recently for a campaign for ourselves. And their partnership with them allowed us to have tax-deductible donations to all of the people who contributed through Indiegogo at no additional fee. So we only lost that 6%. We didn't lose any more on top of that.
Indiegogo, as a lot of you probably already know, is a lot like Kickstarter in that you have a goal. You try to raise as much as that goal, and you offer rewards to the people who are pledging to your campaign. The differences between Kickstarter and Indiegogo are, like Kristen said, we could do tax-deductible donations. So for the larger people who donated $1,000 got a tax write-off. And also, it's flexible funding, which means that no matter how much you raise, if you don't reach your goal, you still get to keep those funds, and you also are still responsible for the rewards that you promised. What was really, really cool about this campaign, besides the fact that we reached our goal, which was incredible, and almost 700 people donated to us, which was crazy, and over half of them left comments or notes of thanks or encouragement. It was awesome, and it was especially great for youth who couldn't really afford to donate that much. We had almost 200 people just donate $5, and it was just amazing to see how many people were so incredible and believed in us so much.
Yeah, allowing a lot of the youth that read our site to feel like they could contribute and to see the power in those numbers was really very important for them and incredible for us. And it just highlighted to us again the impact of the work that we're doing and that so many of us are all doing on the internet. And it fueled us to continue pushing the limits of how we could continue to grow and how best to reach these youth through the internet and on the ground. Now we're in a stage where we're currently working on applying for grants, and we're trying to connect with individuals and corporations for higher levels of donations in the hopes that we can support ourselves for like a year instead of two months and then two more weeks and then maybe three more weeks and, you know, in this terrifying structure that we've now found ourselves in. So on that note, if any of you are just, you know, 4 feet off your chairs because you're just sitting on so much money, you have nowhere to put it, we accept all forms of currency, I think, and you'll get a tax write-off, so...
We're not kidding.
This is where we stare at you uncomfortably.
That all said, we are insanely thankful for the success that we've seen so far. We're blown away daily by the fact that we're still surviving and still able to continue to grow and use our voices online as a communication tool for anyone who's offline. Our organization really is proof not only that social media can be used to create change and a way to take action, but that taking action doesn't mean lining up at a protest and waving your arms in the air. It can take very, very many different forms. We've found a way to use laughter and lighthearted conversation for deep and intense issues.
Yeah, there is obviously a fine line between just liking something on Facebook or liking something on Tumblr and taking action. And there's a huge debate going on right now about that, about the fact that just liking something is not enough. But I really think that what we've done with Everyone is Gay is proof that actually, when you're liking stuff on the internet, when you're reblogging stuff on the internet, there can be a change that happens. The attention and the response that we saw is exactly what promoted Danielle and I to do more work, to get on the ground, to keep moving. So I do think that it's important to note that there is something. There is something happening on the internet. And also, we found that there are so many people out there who are very discouraged by what they don't know, who don't feel empowered to make change or to take action because they just don't understand. Recently, we had something interesting, I think, happen on our site literally last week. We reblogged a video, the Stop Kony video from Invisible Children, and Danielle and I were in support of the organization and of the movement, and when we blogged it, as I'm sure many of you could suspect, there was quite an outrage from a lot of our readers. They were very unhappy with us for supporting the organization. They felt that they were not doing the things that they said they were going to do, etc. And that's the dialogue was great, but the problem was that for a lot of the people who were saying, you shouldn't do that, you shouldn't have done that, they weren't taking positive action. They weren't saying, okay, well, we don't believe in this organization because of this, so why don't you do this, this, or this? Instead, they were really investing all of their energies into saying, you shouldn't have done this, this was wrong. So the following day, we did a post which was out of character for us. It was not a question and answer. It was just our response, and we used it just as a means of highlighting that instead of just knocking that organization down, just knocking us down, they should really take the next step and take action in a way that they felt was, you know, important and appropriate. We don't all have to agree on how to do it, but just complaining and just tearing down other people is obviously not positive.
If you want to raise awareness, social media has made that super, super easy. And as we've mentioned before with our growth and our reblogs and retweets, different forms of sharing are all incredible ways to let the people in your community know what you care about, why they should care about it. And back to being awesome for just a quick second. If all you're blogging is raise awareness and vote for this and be active, people sort of start to get that glazed over look in their eye and they don't really pay attention to what you're saying anymore. There really is something to sprinkling in tiny kittens and funny stuff. And then when you say something that you care about, people are already paying attention. Because we make everyone laugh all the time, people are halfway through reading a post about why they need to vote this week in North Carolina before they even realize what they're reading. Therefore, we have tricked them into caring about their community. It's a mind game. We're not the only ones who are doing it, obviously. There are a few comedians. Sarah Silverman, I think, is really, really good at it. She's hysterical on Twitter. She tweets things like, I just said granola too many times, and I have no idea what it means or how I ever knew it. I read that while I was eating granola, by the way. And she says, what comes first, the short frosted hairdo or the no sexuality? And then she says, we're all alone in our heads. Good night, sweetie. I mean, she makes me die laughing. And because she's doing that, whenever she stops and says something serious, people actually pay attention. During the It Gets Better campaign, I felt like one of her videos was one of the most successful because people were paying attention to what she said.
Dear America, when you tell gay Americans that they can't serve their country openly or marry the person that they love, you're telling that to kids, too. So don't be fucking shocked and wonder where all these bullies are coming from that are torturing young kids and driving them to kill themselves because they're different. They learned it from watching you.
Well said. You know what I mean?
Right.
Another comedian that we really like is named Rob Delaney. He is hysterical, and what's interesting about him is that he actually uses the humor as a means of communicating. First of all, if you want to know what you'd find, like if you just tuned into his Tumblr, probably like that. That's sort of his style, you know? We think it's real funny because we're six, and so are most of you, you know? But then he also tweets things. This is really recent. He just recently tweeted, I love gay people, or as I sometimes call them, people. You know? Like, and it's funny, and you laugh, but you're also thinking, oh, okay, like, there's a point here. There's a really important point here. The bottom line is that the internet, because it exists, has made us all want to hear things the way that we want to hear them. People really do demand that information is delivered to them the way they want it, and they like to know the people that are delivering the information, and everyone likes to laugh. I mean, that's something that I think everyone can agree on. So what we've done and what we think others should do, because what we found, I mean, we showed you two comedians, because when we look for organizations who are trying to use humor and use their personal selves as a means of connecting with people, we really didn't find that many. We found people as comedians who were doing that, but we think that the laughter is important for bigger organizations as well. So we use that laughter, and we're going to continue to use it to spread it through social media, to use it to disperse information, and to inform people about the critical need for action. And we think that it's an amazing way to make people stop and to listen and to act. So that's it.
That's the panel part. And then... Thank you. So... there will be a microphone that you have to talk into if you want to... Oh, there's a question.
And we have
wait
six,
for the microphone.
We have 6 minutes. Oh, yeah, we just learned... Everybody probably knows this. We are very new to South by Southwest and just have been confused for 4 days. We've been, like, eating macaroni and cheese confused.
Okay.
Oh, I didn't know we got the mic. I'm sorry.
Yeah, question. My name is Daniel Villarreal. I'm with the Dallas Voice. A quick question. At the last panel I was at, which is about kind of lesbian, like, slash fiction remixes. They said sometimes they're really hard to put them on YouTube, not only because of copyright issues, but because it's not a safe place for lesbian fans of that sort of stuff to comment, because people will be like, die, fag, die.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, how have you guys dealt with that? Because it seems like there were comments on your videos.
We haven't had that many negative comments. And also, we put our videos on Vimeo sometimes, too.
Yeah.
Copyright.
Yeah, well... as far as the copyright issue goes, right, it's obviously impossible for us to purchase the rights to 3 songs every other week. But usually what happens on YouTube is that the link comes up so that it directs them to buy the song. We always credit the artists. We always link to their stuff, and it shows in the credits as well. But yeah, we've had probably 4, 5, or 6 webcasts where they've pulled the audio entirely, and then we redirect people to Vimeo to look at it there. And as for the comments, I mean, yeah, that is the flip side of things. The anonymity really powers people to say really awful things. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why.
I don't either.
I do not know why it doesn't, knock on wood, it really has not seemed to affect us as much as it affects a lot of people. But the thing is that I think even when it does, even when you get comments that are like, you're a fag and you should go to hell, or, you know, we've gotten some messages that are like, you should jump off a bridge because blah, blah, blah. It's awful. But we're getting so many more messages from people who are like, thank God I can ask this anonymously. Otherwise, I wouldn't have asked it. So for us, that really outweighs the negative commentary.
And we've also noticed, too, that our readers are super passionate in the way of the community, and they will sort of talk back to the people on our behalf. If someone's like, these two stupid dykey lesbians suck, everyone will be like, oh, hell no, and we don't ever have to say anything. So,
yeah, that's true.
Thanks, guys, you know. Oh.
Hi. I'm Will, and I work for Indiegogo, so if any of you guys aren't sitting on a pile of money but would like to be, you should talk to me. Also, I was just curious. You have these like this bursty traffic, and I know that usually comes in from like one place, right? Like you get featured on Tumblr, and like a lot of traffic comes in. Have you guys like had any strategies for like making that work across all the different places that you're putting out content, or does it not matter?
No, it definitely matters. But we are just now strategizing. I mean, we've been like running after this thing for the last year and a half, being like, oh God, oh, okay. And now, I mean, like just recently, I mean, really properly integrating everything is the best way. Yeah, on Sundays, part of our Indiegogo campaign, we did this compilation of songs called The Gayest Compilation Ever Made. We have a lot of musician friends who are awesome and who made original songs for this compilation. And so every Sunday, we've been featuring one of the songs. And this Sunday, I realized, you know, the way that it feeds into Facebook and the way that it feeds into Twitter is not ideal. So we specifically, you know, did those 3 platforms so that it was optimized for those platforms. And I think that that helps. And then obviously the tying in of everything really helps.
Yeah, just literally just yesterday, Kristen was like, we should be retweeting stuff that we post on Everyone is Gay.
From our own accounts.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I mean, we're learning, you guys. Sorry we have a panel and we don't know what we're talking about. You know what I mean?
I know there was another question over here. Do we have time for it? Yeah?
Do you guys find that you have a responsibility for, like, counseling? I mean, if you're answering serious questions and you're taking it with some humor, but there's a lot of issue behind it, do you feel like you now need to be a counselor, psychologist?
I think that we're better at answering questions because we don't know what we're talking about, if that makes sense.
You can quote her on that.
You can quote me on that. Because I think there have been times where we've gotten questions that were really, really intense, and we don't feel like we can answer them, and we have reached out to our friends who are social workers or what have you and been like, can we answer this? What should we say? And they've been like, you probably shouldn't because you could get into a shitstorm of legal trouble. Can I say shitstorm?
Yeah, we're not at a high school.
Okay.
When we're at high schools, we panic. We're like, you're a jerk. You're such a jerk.
But yeah, I think it makes me not want to be a counselor because I feel like just simply going through the motions of life and sitting in bed and crying for 6 days straight, like, gives me the right kind of mindset to be able to tell someone that they're allowed to sit in bed and cry for 6 days straight, right?
I agree. I mean, we definitely do. An ultimate goal for us is to have people that do work with us who are certified in certain areas where we can answer questions. I mean, we obviously, like, we would never answer a question that's about child abuse or domestic abuse. We're not qualified, and it just wouldn't be right coming from us. But the majority of questions that we answer are these questions that any person in this room somehow would know how to answer these questions or has gone through something like that. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, I think that's what makes people actually like us, is that we're not approaching it from a clinical standpoint. We're approaching it from this place of like, yeah, you need to eat a lot of cookies and cry on the train and it's going to be okay, you know?
Hi, I'm Matteo. One question. So you kind of uncovered a Pandora's box of questions and something has popped out. And I kind of have the impression that not enough is being made in a lot of institutions, and then the result is you go on the internet and mm-hmm. you ask questions to you, and it's beautiful mm-hmm. that you are kind of helping out. But do you have an opinion on what should be made on a broader level? I'm sure Everyone is Gay is doing a lot, but what about something bigger and something maybe more institutional?
Yeah, I mean, I think right off the bat, middle schools, high schools, elementary schools need to be addressing things equally. Sex education alone, I mean, it's not that all we talk about is sex, it isn't, but sex education in high schools, we have so many questions from teens who are like, I would like to practice safe sex, but they only told me how to do that with a boy and a girl, so can you guys help, you know? And so I think that addressing how we approach these issues in schools is everything. I mean, obviously, the way that parents approach things in their homes is also very important, but I feel like you can't make that change as easily. But dealing with the school institutions and having it be mandatory that books in elementary schools are not all mommy and daddy, and that, you know, history, we just learned that in California they changed their laws so that the history in whenever they get to civil rights not only includes currently what's being included in civil rights, but also includes, you know, Harvey Milk and all of the gay liberation that was happening around those times. And those things are really what contribute to bullying and contribute to violence and contribute to this confusion and isolation, because you're not hearing anything about it when you're in school, you know? You're hearing all of the things except for the people who are like you, and so you feel alone.
Yeah, I also think that a lot of it, though we do sort of want to place the blame on schools, a lot of it, I think, is in the homes and with the parents and how they are treating people around them. I mean, if you're 6 years old and you're walking with your mom and your mom is like, she should not be wearing pants that low, then, you know, you in your six-year-old brain, you're like, oh, there's a right way to wear pants and a wrong way to wear pants. Okay. So I think that a lot of it is, I guess parents shouldn't have to take classes on it. I don't know.
Well, that's
right?
What's difficult about parents.
I don't know what the answer is, but I feel like that there's got to be something where we, as grown-ups, are being a good influence
Right? Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing that we encourage when we go to schools, and hopefully we will also be going to workplaces and, you know, mm-hmm. places that are not schools, is kindness. People expect for us to sit down and be like, so this is how you be gay and blah, blah, blah. That's not what we do. But the biggest thing that we focus on is just being kind and not being judgmental. And if, you know, and that's not really an institutional answer, but if somehow right. we could figure out
but
a way.
If everyone was nice to each other, we probably wouldn't have a lot of these problems.
We wouldn't have any right? of them. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. How does this work? Do people just get to keep asking questions? I'm excited about it, but just I'm so worried that like the doors are going to fly open and everybody's going to get sucked out. I don't know how this works.
Hi, I'm Ben from the Human Rights Campaign. And,
oh, hi.
So I know that your format really works because you're two funny lesbians and you know, use your own voices and stuff like that. But has there ever been ideas of expanding the voices of the people who are answering questions to include, you know, communities of color and how gay men obviously approach situations a little differently than lesbians, you know? And with the anonymous postings, how do you know if the person asking, like, how do you initiate a first kiss was male, female, transgender? All the layers.
I think one of the things we try to highlight is those things don't matter as much as we all think. So how do I initiate a first kiss is a question that every single human being has had, regardless of gay, straight, trans, and what color your skin is and how much you weigh and where you work. You know what I mean? So that's a lot of what we do on our site is not purposefully not focus on those things.
But on the flip side, yes, we've thought a lot about, I mean, the problem is that people who come to our site are like Kristen and Danielle, and they're used to it and it's consistent. And so changing that is a really intricate and delicate thing. But when we return home, actually, and we've been talking about it all through this tour, we're creating a youth advisory board where we'll have students. I mean, we've met, God, the people that we've met on our tours, they're just incredible. They're like 17 years old. And I'm like, you realize you're going to be president, right? Because you're going to be president. And so in that sense, that's the immediate answer for us, is to have a board of, you know, 15 or so youth who are men, who are black, who are Asian, who are, you know, Muslim, and who encompass a much larger field of experience than we do. But I think in the long term, yes, in the long term, I would like to have guest answers who do posts, both in, you know, in response to what you asked earlier about clinical experience, and in response to, we answer trans questions, but neither one of us is trans. Mm-hmm. So no, you know, we can't answer everything on that, and I think it is important. So
yeah, and we've also answered, we had a girl once who was like, hi, I just came out to my mom, but she said I couldn't be gay because I was black. And we were like, okay. Yeah. But I mean,
the way she asked it was actually really funny. She was like, hi, I'm black. And we were like, what? Okay. So we do our best. And I do think that a lot of times what we say hits home with a lot of people. But I do think there's more need for, mm-hmm. you know, expanding and including everybody's views. It's just delicate.
Hi, I'm Dave from CB2. I was wondering, have you ever partnered or teamed up with other organizations like the Trevor Project?
Whoa.
That's so weird. That
it's like you're
that.
Reading our brain mind.
We've been playing phone tag with Trevor Project for the last 3 days.
Yeah.
So funny. Yeah. We want to, very much so. And we've just started that process with them specifically because we're going into schools and we're, you know, a lot of times we talk about the Trevor Project. So we do feel like there's a lot of overlap there. We're very open to working with other organizations. It's just a matter of how they fit with us. And I think we're at a point now where we have enough behind us where people will take us a little bit more seriously. But, you know, like a year ago, we were like, so we're called Everyone is Gay. And they're like, what? That doesn't sound like change making. You know, it sounds like you're whatever. But we do want to work with other organizations. And we recently started working with smaller organizations. There's a project going on right now called Self-Evident Truths, where they're going around the country and they're photographing people from the queer community. And it's an awesome project. And so we've taken print materials from them and vice versa. There's Campus Pride is a really great organization where they have basically report cards on a lot of college campuses that show how they are in terms of transphobia, homophobia, etc. And so you can go as a student and navigate that. So we've been working with them to integrate our work with them in that way. But we're very interested in doing a lot more work collaboratively.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
So you guys are both doing a great job. It seems like you've fully integrated your digital lives in a public way. So even though you talk about maintaining like two Twitter accounts or a Twitter account for everyone who's gay and for yourselves individually, as examples of doing this really effectively, do you think that having like a professional online persona and then your own online life where you're connected to people you may actually know beyond fans and friends, et cetera, is sort of like a dead concept? Like how would you advise somebody who's looking to do that?
Mm-hmm. I think it's actually really interesting because I think you're right. I think it's starting to get way too muddled. We try to keep our offline lives a little bit more private, but it really is. It's getting weird and creepy these days with Facebook and everything. But it must have been 6 months ago where we went on Facebook and like unfriended all of the people that we weren't real life friends with because we were like, okay, we have to consciously do that. And I think it's for our own sanity and for the betterment of our relationships and home lives. And
whatnot. Yeah, I do think that we're in an interesting position, as are probably a lot of you because you're here at Interactive. For me, the only thing I have that's private is a private Facebook account, and I don't really use that much social media outside of what we do because I feel like all I'm doing all day is social media. But I think there's something really important to keeping it separate. Mm-hmm. If you do use it, because we do put a lot of our personal stuff out there and it's important, but not all of it. And I need a small space to call my own. Otherwise, I feel like, you know, I'm going to lose it.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Are we all done now? Nobody has any questions?
No, I think
thank you all for being here.
Thank you.